Okay, guys, welcome to Truth Hurts Radio. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Beautiful, bright, sunny day out there today. Hope it's the same where you're at. Got a great guest lined up today, guys. Got Joseph Farrell coming on from Adventures Unlimited Press. He's got a new book out called Cosmic War. Very interesting stuff. We'll be bringing him up after the break. First, a few quick announcements. I'm just looking over the headlines this morning. U.S. says it has no objection to Egyptian nuclear program. Isn't that interesting? They have an objection to Iran's nuclear program, but not to Israel. I mean, not to Egypt's. And why is that? Because Egypt knows how to... See, that's Ahmadinejad's problem there, whoever you say that. He doesn't know how to pucker up. See, if he would just pucker up and promise Israel... Oh, I said it. Oh, son of a gun. I just violated the anti-hate speech bill. Oh, jeez. Well, to atone for my sin, I will say Hail Israel.
Hail Israel, full of grace, blessed art thou above all nations, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, IPAC.
There. I just atoned for my sin. Excuse me. Pardon my indiscretion. But this is unbelievable. You know, Egypt can develop a nuclear program, but Iran can't, and we're going to blow them off the map. Again, it has nothing to do with warfare. They simply want nuclear power like most every other country wants, but nope, we're going to use that as an excuse to start World War III. You can't have it. This hypocrisy, this double standard is just getting it's just out of control. It's not getting out of control. It is out of control. And speaking of that, hypocrisy. Where is it here? I had another interesting... let's see. Where'd it go? No, son of a gun. Well, anyway, there was another article about waterboarding. It was considered a crime, guys, by the United States government, a war crime, at Nuremberg. It was brought up and it was condemned as an international war crime. Now here we are doing it, and somehow it's okay. Once again, the George Orwellian doublespeak, double standard baloney. I tell you, it's just crazy. Anyway, let me go over to a few quick announcements here before we go to the break. A reminder, guys, the RBN has a live type chat right on the RBN website, republicbroadcasting.org. You can go in there and talk to other listeners, talk to the show hosts live while the shows are going on. If you want to call your senators, guys, and voice your opinion, you know, protesting passage of various sleazy legislation, just about on a daily basis now, we're getting constitution-trampling legislation passed. Call them and give them holy heck. Toll-free number 877-851-6437. They'll put you in touch with your local representative, senators. Also, you can dial the non-toll-free number 202-224-3121 or 202-225-3121. Let them know you're onto them. Let them know you're watching them. Let them know they're under the microscope. Let them know that you have your total information awareness network and your total scrutinization network watching them 24/7 for a change. Seriously. Put them on the watch. Put them in fear for a change. They're like doing it with us, sleazebags. Anyway, Aaron Russo DVD, Freedom of Fascism, available from RBN for $19.95 plus $4.95 shipping and handling. You can get that by calling 800-724-2719 or by going to the website, republicbroadcasting.org. You can order there through PayPal. All right, guys, stick with us. We'll be right back with our guest, Joseph Farrell. Should be pretty interesting stuff.
T Today's energy infrastructure is antiquated and fails to meet the needs and demands of its customers. Our Renewable Energy Solar Program is the first to give you the opportunity to adopt green energy in your home without having to make a huge investment. Our Renewable Energy Solar System converts sunlight directly into usable electricity where utility power and net metering are available. Our grid-connected solar electric system is designed to produce up to 100% of the energy consumed by you throughout the year. It is allowed by net metering laws. It's finally affordable to go solar. There's no system to purchase, no installation costs, no maintenance fees, no permit hassles, no performance worries, and no rate increases. Reserve your system today. Call 866-276-3975. That's 866-276-3975. Or click on the web banner on RBN. Rethink solar and join the solution. Together, we can make a difference.
Have you ever considered purchasing storable foods? Well, now is the time to do so and take advantage of Ready Reserve Foods pre-special, pre-oil shortage, pre-drought, pre-bank collapse, pre-housing collapse, pre-dollar collapse, pre-economic collapse, pre-martial law, pre-war, possibly nuclear, pre-bird flu special, and your order will be shipped within 7 business days, not months like some food brokers. Ready Reserve manufactures the food we sell, and we have done so continuously for over 35 years. Call 1-800-453-2202 or visit our website at ReadyReserveFoods.com. We produce only the best in storable foods, all from the USA. 1-800-453-2202. Prepare yourself and family for some rough and bumpy times. 1-800-453-2202 or visit our website at ReadyReserveFoods.com.
Are you concerned about cholesterol, blood pressure? Are you experiencing chest pain? Are you looking for a more natural method to help improve your health issues?
I had 2 mild heart attacks, and I had an 80 to 90% blockage in my artery. Don recommended I take this Cardiovite. I haven't had any chest pain since I've been on it. It's brought my cholesterol down. My blood sugar was really fluctuating from 10 to 14 when I went on the Cardiovite. You know, it really leveled it out. I'm really pleased. And I feel so good about it. I'll tell you, it's great for your circulation because I've noticed that I've had problems with my feet because of the diabetes, and they're getting better. They don't hurt as much. It's really great. I recommend this to anybody.
To learn more, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our website at heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com. Call 1-877-928-8822.
Hey guys, welcome back to True Threats Radio. It's your host, Charlie Giuliani. We now have our guest on the line, Mr. Joseph Farrell, who's a returning guest. Actually, he was here a couple months back talking about Nazi weapon systems, and now here he is coming back to talk about his latest book, The Cosmic War. Welcome, Joe. How are you doing?
Pretty good, Charles. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, great to have you back. I did get your book, read it through, and yeah, it's very interesting.
Thank you.
I understand it's now the top-selling book ever from on Adventures Unlimited. Is that correct?
Actually, that would be SS Brotherhood of the Bell, the book on the Nazi secret weapon. I was on Coast to Coast AM about a month ago, actually, and it leapt pretty high on the Amazon.com website. Cosmic War just came out, and it's selling all right. It's selling steady.
Oh, okay. I thought it was Cosmic War that was. Well, in any case, congratulations. That's great. That's yeah. Once you get a spot on Coast to Coast, you just soar right up there, huh?
Yeah.
That's pretty good. So, how did that work out? Did they contacted you?
Yeah, it was an interview by George Knapp, the reporter from Las Vegas, that was the fellow that broke the Bob Lazar story many years ago, and he, I guess, has taken over every third Sunday of the month as a guest host on Sunday nights on Coast to Coast.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
But anyway, let's get to the your current book. Maybe I'll have you on to talk about the other book, too.
Sure.
certainly this one here is very interesting. Why don't you give our listening audience a rough overview of what the book is about, and then we can get into the nuts and bolts of it.
Sure. The book is called The Cosmic War, and the subtitle is Interplanetary Warfare, Modern Physics, and Ancient Texts. And the basic premise or thesis of the book is that sometime, perhaps millions of years ago, about 3 million years ago, an interplanetary warfare was fought in our own solar system, particularly centering around a civilization that was most possibly based on the Earth, the Moon, Mars, and some of the satellites of Jupiter and Saturn. The basic premise is that the anomalous artifacts and features of certain planets in the solar system really cannot be adequately explained on any naturalist basis, and that therefore one has to look to acts of deliberate destruction in a war. And I should point out also that in the book I kind of pursue a two-track approach to make that case. One is obviously from the standpoint of modern physics, and then the second is from the standpoint of reading certain ancient texts from Egypt and the Sumerian region in Mesopotamia from the standpoint of certain modern physics ideas. And I come to the conclusion that there is a fairly good prima facie case that this war actually took place.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds crazy at first, but anybody who's ever looked into the possibilities or probabilities of, I would say, assurances of ancient advanced technology, it's not quite so unfeasible after all.
Right.
In fact, leading up to this show, I should have done, I've got a show coming up I'm going to do on that very topic, advanced technology in the distant past. I should have done that on Friday as a prelude to this discussion, you know, to prep people that aren't familiar with this subject. But the ancients, you know, this is one of the fairy tales that we're fed, that the ancients were increasingly less intelligent the further back in time you go. But it's actually the reverse of that, isn't it?
Well, yes, and this is an excellent point that you make, because if we go back to two of the premier and obviously most sophisticated civilizations on record, namely Egypt and Sumer, what we find is a very peculiar thing, and that is precisely what you indicated. The further back we go, the more advanced they seem to be, and then we reach a point where there's just nothing. In other words, these civilizations spring fully fledged into being with a very sophisticated mathematics and astronomical science almost completely from nowhere. And that, of course, you know, just isn't a very workable model for the progress of any civilization. So something had to have preceded them. And in fact, if we look at those civilizations' texts of what they say about their own origins, they are very clear to state the fact that they viewed themselves as a legacy of something that pre-existed them, and moreover, that they viewed themselves as a declined legacy from what had pre-existed them. So it's a very good point that you make.
Yeah, I mean, like Plato, for example,
he describes
how Solon, was that his name, Solon, the Egyptian priest there?
Right.
Well, the Egyptian priest had told Solon, the Greek that visited Egypt,
right,
you know, that you Greeks think you're so smart, yet you're only rediscovering things that were known from time of old. And, all cultures look back at their distant forefathers as
right,
much wiser, much smarter, much more advanced. And, you know, we see this all over the world. The Chinese, too, look back at
the Aztecs, the Mayans, the Incas, you know, it's a clear, discernible pattern in almost every ancient tradition that you can consult. But the clearest textual indications that we have of this pre-existing civilization are precisely from Egypt and Sumer.
Yeah, specifically. Well, also ancient India, the Mahabharata,
Yes,
I think
exactly.
One of the most fascinating documents. Actually, this stuff from ancient Babylon that also talks in similar, you know, outright scientific terms. I mean, it's not fairy tale. It's not even colored with fantasy talk. You know, some of these ancient documents are real historical, scientific sounding recollections of something that, quite frankly, they couldn't even have dreamt up. You know, it's too accurate.
Well, this is an excellent point too, because I keep bumping into the same phenomenon, and in fact, in the Cosmic War, I reproduce as much of those texts as I dare, you know, without leaving the reader swimming in a blizzard of footnotes. But this is something that I've noticed too, that these texts are describing technologies and the deployment of technologies in very specific and very clear ways, that once we have a grasp of certain concepts in modern physics, you can actually see the similarities in the texts emerge with the similarities in these modern physics ideas. So it's again a kind of a two-track approach, but you're exactly correct. The texts themselves are rather phenomenal. You know, if you try reading them as mythological texts, they seem to boggle the mind.
Right. And I think specifically of the talk of, you know, Vermanicraft.
Right.
And very detailed, again, very scientific. You know, it says when they took off to the skies, they roared like a lion and spit fire and... you know, it describes them as great iron birds.
Right.
And it even mentions that they were propelled by the power latent in Mercury.
Yes, exactly. Yes, and I discussed those Vimana texts very specifically in my first book, which is called The Giza Death Star, and I refer to it again, believe it or not, in reference to this very super-secret Nazi secret weapons project during World War II called the Bell, because it appears that those ancient texts may have had some founding basis in Nazi conceptions and experiments with that particular project.
Yeah, there's even talk that I guess some Chinese scientists and Indian scientists have actually consulted some of these texts, and it looks like they may have been the basis for the modern Indian nuclear warfare program. As a matter of fact, they named their nuclear test program a few years back Project Ignaya, didn't they? Which, of course, is the name of the weapon, the secret weapon that was used in the Mahabharata.
Yes, this is quite true. And in fact, the Chinese as well indicated that when the Vimana texts were first republished in English very recently in the last 30 years or so, in fact, by my publisher, he mentions the fact in his book about the subject that the Chinese were very interested in these texts and consulted some Indian Sanskrit scholars about the meaning of these texts and communicated, incidentally, to the Indians very clearly that they intended to integrate or incorporate these texts into their space program. So this is not new stuff by any means, but it's certainly new in that we're dealing with very clearly, in the case of the Chinese, and again, I believe in the case of Nazi Germany, of world powers that were very interested in the scientific conceptions that these ancient texts contained.
Yeah, and, you know, this discussion wouldn't be complete without mentioning Oppenheimer.
Oh, no. No, it wouldn't. This is a very interesting thing, and I mentioned that particular incident in a couple of my previous books, not so much in The Cosmic War, but in a couple of previous ones. Oppenheimer, at the Trinity test in New Mexico in July of 1945, was actually heard quoting a line from the Mahabharata, and the line is, "Behold, I have become as death, the destroyer of worlds." And that particular quotation comes at the end of a section of the Mahabharata where there is a rather lengthy description of the effects of some of these weapons, which have every appearance of nuclear weapons.
Fascinating stuff. We're going to pick up it there after this short break. And also, we got a call that we'll take him to when we get back. Stick with us, folks.
The ideology powering the Democrats and Republicans is not liberalism or conservatism, but globalism. Globalists are concerned with what's good for big business and the American empire instead of what's fair for the American people. The only antidote to the poison of globalism is nationalism. Start reading the Nationalist Times each month. The Nationalist Times promotes a common sense, intelligent, and passionate alternative to the reigning party line. Published monthly since 1985, the Nationalist Times is a 20-page newspaper featuring outstanding writers and columnists who don't believe in taboos or sacred cows. Be one of the many thousands of loyal readers of the Nationalist Times. Subscribe now to the Nationalist Times. Just $19 for 1 year. That's 50% off the regular price. Send your $19 subscription to the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. That's the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. Or subscribe online at our website, www.anu.org.
Eating a well-balanced diet filled with whole foods is sometimes hard to achieve, so supplementation can be beneficial. But WholeFoodToday.com believes that if you want to supplement, you should be doing so with products made from complex and natural whole foods, which the body can recognize and utilize as food, rather than with synthetic formulas of isolated vitamins made in chemical factories. Whole Food Today is dedicated to bringing you the finest health products at an incredible value. Nutrient formulas for men and women, super green food formulas made from over 30 vegetables, legumes, sprouts, immunity health formulas, coconut oil, krill oil, and many other products made 100% naturally. Visit us today at www.wholefoodtoday.com or call 1-800-989-9840. That's www.wholefoodtoday.com or call 1-800-989-9840. Whole Food Today offers free shipping to all orders anywhere in the continental U.S. Whole Food Today, empowering people to attain and maintain extraordinary health.
Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist unjust war. It is an established historical fact that the Vatican has publicly stated that the Iraqi war is an unjust war. However, it miserably failed to tell its Catholic soldiers that it is a mortal sin to attack Iraq. The Protestant ministers in unison should take the logical step of telling their soldiers that it is a serious offense against God to participate in this unjust war. However, if enough Protestant ministers do not take this logical step, then the lay Catholics and Protestants have a serious obligation to demand of their clergy to take this logical step publicly. Personally, I am doing all that I can to stop the continuation of the murder, carnage, and suffering that is being committed against the innocent people of Iraq in this terrible, unjust war. For additional facts regarding this grave matter, order the lecture by Father John Martinez entitled WW3 Can Still Be Prevented. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for more information and ordering.
Okay, welcome back to True Threats Radio. It's your host, Charlie Giuliani. We've got Joseph Farrell on as our guest, talking about his latest book, The Cosmic War. So coming back to, finishing up that point about Oppenheimer, he was asked, you know, how does it feel to be part of the team that created the world's first atomic bomb? And what did he say to that? Very interesting response he gave.
Well, this was recorded in the New York Herald Tribune. I think the year was 1947 or 48. I'm not quite certain. But a reporter asked him if it was the first time in World War II that nuclear weapons had been used. And Oppenheimer's response was very interesting. He said, yes. And then he sort of lowered his voice so that only those in his immediate vicinity, and the reporter was one of them, could hear him. And what he added to that was, in modern times. Now, this is very interesting because Oppenheimer was himself a Sanskrit scholar. It was kind of a pastime or a hobby with him.
Right.
And he, therefore, was very familiar with these descriptions of weapons that, in some passages, have every semblance to nuclear weapons detonation. So he was himself involved in this kind of attempt to look at ancient texts and construe them in terms of modern technology, and therefore to take those texts seriously when they were talking about some of these ancient wars.
And isn't it true that a great many of the Vedas are still yet to have been studied and translated?
Oh, yes, that's quite true. In fact, the Mahabharata itself is a work that in the Sanskrit runs several volumes, and any English translation really is just kind of a thumbnail sketch of them, pulling certain passages of the Mahabharata out and kind of telling the story in a Cliff Notes version. But it's very, very difficult to acquire a complete English translation of it.
So I can just imagine what else must be in there. Probably a great deal of it we'll never know. They'll probably suppress it because probably goes into a lot of details that they just don't want us knowing about. I know a lot of ancient legends, Chinese included, talked about the secret of air flight and how they kept this from the public because it was very dangerous. Well, yeah, obviously. The whole point here is, folks, is that if they had this ability to engage in nuclear warfare, it's not a very big step away from that to fathom that they probably had the ability to engage in space warfare as well. And that's the whole gist of the book. But before we go into that in any more detail, we do have Roger on the line in Tennessee. We'll take his call at this time. Roger, welcome to the show.
Yeah, this is Roger. And what I want to know is, do you believe that there was I want to know about North America. Is there any evidence to ascertain the fact that there was like a polar snowing on the ice caps that would make the you know what I'm talking about?
Well, I know that there have been theories put forward by Charles Hapgood and some other people. Hapgood, in fact, proposed the idea of a pole shift in a book.
Pole shift, exactly.
Right, in a book
called Crustal Slippage or whatever, yeah.
Crustal Slippage, yes, it was called The Path of the Pole. And, in fact, that book actually had a preface by none other than Albert Einstein, who was rather intrigued with the ideas that Hapgood presented. And Hapgood really is the most serious scientific author to have proposed that idea. It doesn't really enter into my considerations in the cosmic war for the simple reason that there are other mechanisms of explaining it, and it may not have been the result of that kind of a conflict that I'm talking about in the cosmic war.
Okay, but what about North America? I mean, we have Mormons here that say that Jesus Christ appeared on American soil. What is that all about?
Well, this is an aspect of things that really, the further one digs, the more mystifying it becomes, because there are clear indications in Incan and, in fact, in Mayan religion that parallel, very clearly, similar conceptions in ancient Egyptian religion. And no one really knows how or why this could be. And in terms of the cosmic war hypothesis, in the legends of the Okanagan Indians in North America, and I do talk about them in the book, there is another kind of set of metaphorical references in their legends to this war. So we're really in the presence of something that ultimately, in terms of any standard theory that we have of Indian origins on these two continents, really just don't make any sense by the standard model. My personal view is that these societies in Mesoamerica and Latin America and so on, which incidentally are more advanced than the ones in North America, which you would expect to be the reverse given the standard theory, you know, of the Indians coming over the land bridge and then gradually migrating southward. Well, if that were the case, then we would expect the Indian civilizations in North America to be more advanced than those further south, but the exact opposite is true. So we're confronted again with a mystery. But my personal preference is that all of these civilizations are legacies and considerably declined legacies of
whatever civilization was in place before them. Is what is Atlantis? What is Atlantis?
In my view, in all of my books and in the Cosmic War, I take the view that Atlantis is a multi-tiered metaphor, and that its true meaning is off-planet.
Off-planet?
Yeah. Okay, guys, we got to go to a break. Stick with us if you want.
Can I stick with you?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Today's energy infrastructure is antiquated and fails to meet the needs and demands of its customers. Our renewable energy solar program is the first to give you the opportunity to adopt green energy in your home without having to make a huge investment. Our renewable energy solar system converts sunlight directly into usable electricity where utility power and net metering are available. Our grid-connected solar electric system is designed to produce up to 100% of the energy consumed by you throughout the year. It is a allowed by net metering laws. It's finally affordable to go solar. There's no system to purchase, no installation costs, no maintenance fees, no permit hassles, no performance worries, and no rate increases. Reserve your system today. Call 866-276-3975. That's 866-276-3975. Or click on the web banner on RBN. Rethink solar and join the solution. Together, we can make a difference.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, for nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places." People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs. It discusses America and Prophecy, the Antichrist, Tyrants and Wars, Secret Societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715. Or mail P.O. Box 771, Athens, Tennessee, 37371.
Hi, Michelle. I haven't seen you on the bus for a while. Did they change your shift?
No, Lori. I finally quit my job. I'm working at home now, and I love it. No more commuting. And I'm home when the kids get out of school.
Working at home? Doing what?
It's a long story. It all started when I discovered the website earnmoneyathome123.com.
Oh, Michelle, you didn't fall for one of those internet deals, did you?
Well, I looked into several, and this one is for real.
Are you sure?
I didn't quit my job until I was sure, and now I'm making way more money working at home.
Really?
I've joined the success team in their major advertising co-op. Our business is fully automated, which gives me more money and the time to enjoy it. I'll be earning money while we're skiing this winter.
What was that website again?
EarnMoneyAtHome123.com. Here, write it down.
Good idea. EarnMoneyAtHome123.com. Maybe we can go skiing this winter, too.
All right, guys. Welcome back to Two Thirds Radio. Your host, Charlie Giuliani. We're interviewing Joseph Farrell, and we've got Roger on the line. Yeah, so, Raj, you were asking about Atlantis, and well, I think we were cut off right in the middle of the answer you were giving, Joe. So,
yeah, I was just asking questions about North America and Atlantis, and I just wanted that whole take on that.
Yeah.
All right, well, my answer is a complicated one, and I actually elaborate it in my three pyramid books, which are called The Giza Death Star, The Giza Death Star Deployed, and The Giza Death Star Destroyed, as well as in this new book, The Cosmic War. When we look at these ancient texts and mythologies, it's my opinion that what we're dealing with any time we encounter symbols, especially like Atlantis, that we're dealing with several sets or layers of meaning all at the same time. So Atlantis simultaneously functions as a symbol for this lost civilization. It can certainly function as a symbol of a literal lost continent or large island in some ocean of the world. And that, incidentally, is the way it's best interpreted when you encounter the occurrence of this lost world or continent in North American and South American Indian traditions. But if you look at Plato's actual dialogues, the Critias and the Timaeus, in which he discusses Atlantis, and you look at the numbers that he gives in reference to Atlantis and interpret them from a modern physics standpoint, you come out with some truly astounding things. And this has been brought out by an American physicist by the name of Paul LaViolette. Those numbers, if you graph them as a wave, actually show the stationary wave profile of a proton. Now, this means that it's encoding a very sophisticated physics as well. So in the broader context of these ancient myths, Atlantis can be seen as a symbol, really, for their understanding of the physics of creation itself. So it's a very complicated, interrelated set of meanings that the symbol conveys.
Well, can I ask you something?
Sure.
Okay. Don't you think that the whole, Adam and Eve, and it's all a transition unto that, which it is itself. You know what I'm saying?
No, not really. I'm not really following you.
Yeah, it's kind of getting us off the track here. Did you have anything more specific regarding, advanced technology or the possibility of warfare? No, but
Adam and Eve, it's all a Masonic thing. It's all about a system. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's all about a system. They were trying to make in place the Freemasonics.
Okay. I do explore in the Cosmic War.
Charles, listen to me. They tried to implement this as a system from Adam and Eve, and it was a parable. It was a parable. I know I'm not saying it correctly because my whole life is just completely just like way out there. But believe me, you know what I'm saying?
So it represented something else. Okay,
yeah,
I got you.
It represents something. You know what I'm talking about, don't you?
Okay, we'll have him comment on that. Was there anything else? We'll let you go because I don't want to take up too much of the show here. We've got a lot of ground to cover.
Okay.
Was that it, Raj?
That's it.
Okay, thanks a lot. We'll let him comment now. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, very briefly, if I understood him correctly, in the Sumerian texts, Adam and Eve were engineered genetically by whoever it was that was here that represented an intelligent species on Earth before us. In the Sumerian texts, Adam and Eve were created precisely to be slaves or basically workers for these other creatures or other beings.
Yeah, I think that's what he was driving at, like there's some hidden meaning or something. Well, all ancient legends do this. You have all these descriptions of battles pertaining to the gods, which really represent the planets, essentially. And, why were they so fascinated with this? Why did every ancient culture, everywhere you go, why did they talk about this? Obviously, it's symbolic. It means something. And it's a tragedy, isn't it, that this is ignored by mainstream science across the board, historians and anthropologists, and they just don't give any credence at all to these ancient texts.
Well, it is a tragedy, and I think increasingly, and I think things like my book are going eventually to force a reconsideration of these ancient texts, because the physics implications of these texts, if you examine them in detail and with an eye to viewing the science that's involved in them, clearly imply the existence of a very sophisticated civilization in possession of some extraordinarily sophisticated physics and weaponry based on it. So I think eventually it's going to have to be reconsidered.
Right. Yeah, we can't so easily write this stuff off. There's too much consistency across the board from one culture to another. And this is especially a big problem for them. Mainstream, historians and whatnot, archaeologists, that there's so much consistency with them. How do they explain that in the context of these cultures supposedly having been separate from one another, never having any contact? It's time that they let that much cherished dogma go, isn't it?
Oh, I absolutely agree. And, the real problem with this is, Charles, that if people like me or Richard Hoagland or others who've kind of investigated this aspect of the story are correct, then there was a civilization in this solar system that was quite literally blown to bits in a war eons ago. And therefore, some of the technology of that civilization may still be lying around on various planetary bodies as well as our own Earth in this solar system. And ultimately, I think part of the motivation for the continued academic dogmatism is to keep people from investigating this aspect of things too closely, because then certain agendas in play politically and in terms of the military and scientific community come into question very seriously.
Yeah, I mean, you can obviously see a deliberate suppression. I don't think the reason is because they don't think there's any credence at all. I think they're absolutely suppressing this. They don't want us looking into, when you start doing your own research and thinking outside the box, you realize, boy, we're kept in the dark about a whole lot of things.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely, I agree with you.
And, you know, sometimes it's just pride. But other times, I think there's some downright sleazy underpinning reasons behind this.
Maybe, oh, yes.
Yeah.
No argument from me.
Yeah. It's amazing. And, you know, you start looking at plasma cosmology, which I noticed you dedicate a whole chapter to in your book there.
Yes.
And that's another fiasco. You know, when you look at cosmology in general in that context, it explains a whole lot of things that otherwise scientists appear to be in a quandary over, you know, trying to explain gravitational effects that don't make sense to them, so they come up with all these ridiculous theories. Why don't they just let go of their gravity theory and recognize that there's other forces out there more powerful? Let's talk about that and how that fits into your idea of the cosmic war, you know, the whole plasma cosmology thing. That was very interesting.
Well, this arose in the work of a Swedish physicist by the name of Hannes Alfvén. He's actually a Nobel Prize winning physicist, and then a very prominent American physicist who's also a plasma cosmologist by the name of Anthony Perrat. And Perrat did a truly remarkable thing. He examined North American Indian petroglyphs, these little writings and carvings on rocks that one can find around America, but predominantly in the American Southwest. And most anthropologists interpret these things as stick figures, you know, little kind of straw men that we used to draw as kids. But Perrat, when he examines these petroglyphs, noticed a very significant thing. Many of these petroglyphs had strong pictographic resemblance to actual plasma discharges that could be created in the laboratory. And he consulted a number of these petroglyphs and made a number of comparisons, and I reproduce these pictures in the book. And then he published them in a peer-reviewed scientific paper in the Journal for Plasma Physics. And what truly is amazing about this research is that these petroglyphs, since they're about 20,000 years old in some cases, mean that ancient man saw very large celestial plasma discharges and accurately recorded their shape in these petroglyphs. Now, it gets even more interesting when we consider the fact that on our near celestial neighbors, namely the Moon and Mars, there is clear evidence of extremely large plasma discharge that occurred on those planets. And what I mean by a plasma discharge would be simply enormous lightning strikes, enormous electrical arcing. And in particular, on the case of Mars, there's a geological feature called the Valle Marineris that literally kind of runs across an entire hemisphere of the planet almost in a straight line, and it's very clearly the result of a huge, gigantic plasma discharge. Now, it gets more interesting when we consider the fact that these plasma discharges are also depicted in ancient Greek depictions of the divine arrows or weapons of Zeus, and even more significantly, these plasma discharges can be clearly seen on an ancient Babylonian depiction of the Sumerian god Ninurta holding some of these divine arrows in his hand. So in other words, the very depiction of these things in ancient art is an accurate record of the very shape of these plasma discharges that can be generated in the laboratory. And that in turn means that the texts that describe this war have, as having been fought precisely on those planetary bodies, may again be recording something that actually happened rather than something that's merely mythological and that ancient mankind dreamed up and put into his myth.
Yeah, it's fascinating. You look at Parrott there, some of the pictures he's collected from around the world of cliff paintings and carvings from ancient times, and these little stick figures, or squatters, as they call them.
Right.
He's reproduced all of that in the lab, you know, with plasma. There's no question about it. There's, you know, everything falls into place when you take this into consideration. And then there's actually ancient texts, the Greeks, for example, that make reference to bolts of lightning that they distinguish from regular, you know, lightning we see in storms. They actually say originating from planets.
Oh, yes, absolutely. This is where we're getting into the physics that makes this cosmic war possible. And I should stress something about what I believe the cosmic war entails. I believe that the asteroid belt, in line with Thomas Van Flandern's exploded planet hypothesis, who is the modern astronomer from the U.S. Naval Observatory that revived this hypothesis in 20th century astronomy. I believe that the asteroid belt is nothing other than the remains or debris of an exploded planet. Now, the problem in physics is that there is no good naturalist model for why a planet should, on its own, suddenly and spontaneously blow up. So Van Flandern, when he's considering various models to explain why this would have happened, ultimately comes down in his book, and I cite this in The Cosmic War, he comes down to a final possibility, which he mentions should never be discarded, and that is that it was blown up as a deliberate act, in other words, as an act of war. In order to do this, one has to have a physics capable of blowing up a planet. In other words, we have to have a physics that would make a hydrogen bomb look like a firecracker. And part of the result of this physics, if it exists, would be to cause enormous electrostatic discharges and arcings from one planet to another. But this is, I should stress something here. This discharge is not the actual weapon itself. The discharge is the signature of the use of that weapon, and that's the key difference here.
Right, right. So, as you point out in the book, you believe that this possibly played a role, or the role, in the destruction of this trans-Martian planet. Maybe we need to go into some detail on that, how there's this gap between Mars and Jupiter. Maybe we should talk a little bit about that and, you know, what possibly went on there.
Well, in 19th century astronomy, there was a very famous astronomical law that was known as the Titius-Bode law. It was proposed first by some German astronomers named Titius and Bode, and the law predicted the orbits of planets, beginning with Mercury, out from the Sun. And the law predicted that there should be a planet in the asteroid belt, but of course there was none. Now, the importance of the law is that it successfully predicted where the orbit of Uranus was and therefore led astronomers actually to the discovery of that planet. So the problem became what happened to the planet in the asteroid belt. When they discovered the first asteroid, they thought at first that they may have found that missing planet, but it was far too small. When they discovered the second asteroid, those 19th century astronomers very quickly figured out that these were probably the remains of the planet that used to be there. And interestingly enough, they proposed the idea that that planet had somehow exploded and that the asteroid belt itself was the debris. And even more interestingly, they nicknamed that planet Krypton. So, yeah. So, you know, we begin to get kind of the idea that there's something more maybe going on than meets the eye, even in astronomy. So I began to research Van Flandern's hypothesis. I talk about it at great length in the book, as a matter of fact. And one of the interesting things, again, that pops out from his hypothesis is that while it is a very powerful hypothesis in terms of its ability to explain why the asteroid belt exists, why we find diamonds on many of those asteroids or meteors that fall to the Earth from the asteroid belt. In other words, diamonds can only be formed under high pressure, and that in turn implies very heavy mass. So we were dealing with a solid planetary body. But the real problem is that while it can explain everything else, there's no good model of why it should blow up in the first place.
Very interesting stuff. All right, guys, another short break. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
Lose the love I knew, safely need.
Today's energy infrastructure is antiquated and fails to meet the needs and demands of its customers. Our renewable energy solar program is the first to give you the opportunity to adopt green energy in your home without having to make a huge investment. Our renewable energy solar system converts sunlight directly into usable electricity where utility power and net metering are available. Our grid-connected solar electric system is designed to produce up to 100% of the energy consumed by you throughout the year. It is allowed by net metering laws. It's finally affordable to go solar. There's no system to purchase, no installation costs, no maintenance fees, no permit hassles, no performance worries, and no rate increases. Reserve your system today. Call 866-276-3975. That's 866-276-3975. Or click on the web banner on RBN. Rethink solar and join the solution. Together, we can make a difference.
The Berkey Light's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkey Light, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkey Light is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkey Light, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
Have you ever considered purchasing storable foods? Well, now is the time to do so and take advantage of Ready Reserve Foods pre-special, pre-oil shortage, pre-drought, pre-bank collapse, pre-housing collapse, pre-dollar collapse, pre-economic collapse, pre-martial law, pre-war, possibly nuclear, pre-bird flu special, and your order will be shipped within 7 business days, not months like some food brokers. Ready Reserve manufactures the food we sell, and we have done so continuously for over 35 years. Call 1-800-453-2202 or visit our website at ReadyReserveFoods.com. We produce only the best in storable foods, all from the USA. 1-800-453-2202. Prepare yourself and family for some rough and bumpy times. 1-800-453-2202 or visit our website at ReadyReserveFoods.com.
Hey guys, welcome back to Truth Earth Radio. Your host, Charlie Giuliani. We've got Joseph Farrell on, talking about his latest book, The Cosmic War. You know, I collect meteorites, Joe, and there's been this argument proposed by mainstream science, you know, those bozos that pretend to actually look at hard evidence and examine it critically. And, you know, they argue that meteorites prove that there was not this planet that exploded because all the meteorites are so different one from another. Right. Well, you know, that's actually not even that true. But even if it was, I mean, does that prove that they weren't from the same planet? Look how many different varieties of rocks we have here on Earth. You can take a piece of sulfur and a piece of copper and argue they can't be from the same world because they're so different. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
Oh, it is. And you know, it's interesting that you raise that particular point, because Van Flandern himself, when he consulted the geological evidence of the asteroids, there are basically two different classes. There's a silicate-type asteroid, and then there is a carbonaceous-type asteroid. And he proposed on that basis, and for some other reasons, he made a modification to his hypothesis that there were actually two separate explosions of celestial bodies at different periods in the astronomical past on that basis. So what originally began in his theory as a unique event suddenly becomes a rather normal one, and then he was left, of course, with the task of explaining why planets should suddenly and spontaneously explode. And again, I have to stress, he doesn't really have, and neither does the rest of physics, have a very good model of why a planet should explode by natural causes. So again, he came back to the idea that, well, maybe it was the result of deliberate action, in other words, a war, but he just kind of left that hanging there. He didn't really explore the hypothesis any further than to mention it as a possibility. But in my opinion, you're absolutely correct that we don't really have to posit on the basis of difference of asteroid classification that it had to have come from two different types of celestial body. As you say, the Earth itself is composed of many different kinds of material. So I think that, you know, just in terms of that kind of class of evidence, that we might be still dealing with a single event which has yet to be interpreted properly.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like they're obviously trying to divert you away from that hypothesis when everything points in that direction. I mean, just, well, the very nature of the asteroid belt, the way that it's clumped together, and obviously there had to be something there. This, you know, there's a gap.
Yes, and this, I believe you're correct in the diversion as well, that there is a kind of a deliberate effort to divert people from considering that hypothesis seriously. Because, again, once you get into the physics involved, and I explore it at some length in the book, there is no model, really, to explain it other than a war. And if that be the case, then it means there once existed a very sophisticated physics, and therefore a commensurately sophisticated technology that was weaponized in order to blow it up. And once we've said that, then we sort of put a new spin, so to speak, into the covert agendas that might really be behind the space program and some other things.
Yeah, all kinds of crazy stuff going on. I guess we got a caller. We got Mike in New York. We'll take that call at this time. Mike, how you doing? Oh, I guess we got to wait. We're going to go to a break. I'll tell you what, Mike, hold on with us, and we'll take you right when we get back. Stick with us, folks.
With recent